Smokey. Roll them. That's silly. Shoot him now! Shoot him now!
I gotcha!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to That's Not Quite All, Folks, a Looney Tunes podcast. I'm your host, Mark Callum, joined by...
And I'm Jordan Schmidt, and... Oh, man, this one's cool. Just the theme music's really cool. And that should really get you into the mood for the coolness and the awesomeness of the show we are covering today, which is Duck Dodgers. This show is friggin' awesome, guys. I don't know what else you want me to say. I have some fondness regarding this show just from watching it on Cartoon Network as a kid. And because this was a prime time, 7 o'clock-ish kind of show for them. And it felt cool to be watching it. It's like 2003, 2004, and it's like, okay, Duck Dodgers is on. Awesome. That's kind of what it felt like.
Yeah, it's... I'd say of the Looney Tunes shows that we've watched, the ones that are based primarily on Looney Tunes characters so far, this is by far the most creative of them. Because literally all the creative folks had to work with was the original Duck Dodgers short, maybe the sequel short, though I don't think there's anything from that that's in the series proper, and that's it. Everything, like all you had is space, Maurice Noble designs to go by, and Marvin the Martian has to be the main bad guy. That's all they had, and they just went buck wild with it.
Yeah, this show has some of the most intense and expansive world building that has ever been given to a Looney Tunes product. Let's make that abundantly clear. This is still a very loony and very respectful Looney Tunes project. But the lengths that the writers and creators went to give this an expansive, respectful sci-fi world, which we're going to get into, blows my mind, honestly. There was a lot of effort put into this show. That is the thing you see almost right off the bat. So much effort and work and creativity went into this show that you kind of wish that it was given a bit more of a fair shake by Cartoon Network.
Yeah, because this only got 3 seasons. It aired from 2003 to 2005.
Yeah.
Like 38. Roughly. Episodes, right? Roughly like around 36. There. It didn't get... Baby Looney Tunes had more episodes than this, which is a darn travesty.
Well, I mean, it we're far removed from the Warner Brothers Animation 65-episode initial run kind of era. Mostly because it's not going to WB anymore, it's going to Cartoon Network. And Cartoon Network is a bit more selective in terms of what deserves seasons and what deserves... We'll get into that when we actually get into the genesis of this show. But the fine line between what kind of programming Cartoon Network grants more expansive scenes and orders from is going to wound Duck Dodgers massively, and we will get into that, obviously. But before that, which ones are we covering today?
All right, so the episodes we are covering are The Green Loon Turn and The FUD.
Yes, two very conceptually interesting episodes that stood out to us both when we were looking through some for potential ones we could cover today. Because I think you immediately were struck by Green Loon Turn, and I was scrolling through, and I'm like, what's this?
Yeah.
We got to do this one, too.
And good.
I like quadruple
good choice, things. If I may get ahead of myself. Good choice, because...
Well, you had a good choice,
yeah,
too.
We knocked it out of the park. If we can pat ourselves on the back a little bit, we did a good job picking episodes.
We picked two of the best episodes of Duck Dodgers. I thought that Hooray for Hollywood Planet was indicative of the show's quality. It isn't.
Oh my God.
This show is just... this is what this show was capable of, and this show could do huge things. And honestly, the two that we covered are among the higher rated ones on IMDb. They both have a 9.1, both of these. And not many others have ones higher than that.
Wow.
Yeah, so we did really well. And so apologies if we don't have any like other end of the quality ones. But yeah, we picked the cream of the crop for Duck Dodgers, and because this is a show that deserves it. So should we get into the background?
Well, Duck Dodgers, of course, started as a 1953 short called Duck Dodgers in the 24th and a half century. Since that short's release, the short would gain prominence among sci-fi fans. The character itself wouldn't return until 1980 with Duck Dodgers and the Return of the 24th and a half century, which it was a noble attempt to tell a new Duck Dodgers story.
It was a very Maurice Noble attempt.
Yeah, and if you'd like to know more thoughts on the Duck Dodger shorts, episode 19, which is Daffy Duck in Space, we cover both of those shorts in great detail.
And Rocket Squad as well. Yeah. So, but yeah, no, I mean, it's very important because like before we even get to the genesis of this show, Duck Dodgers is a character that people know of, even if they don't know all of the Looney Tunes. They know this short. This short is very... We talked about it then, but it's very influential. People like, even George Lucas, even like people who know shit about sci-fi love this short, and it's very respectful of a lot of the sci-fi lore and a lot of the Buck Rogers kind of stuff. So even the big fans of Looney Tunes love this short.
I mean, it's a great short. It just is. It's funny. It's classic for a reason. It's definitely... definitely really good. So we wouldn't get a continuation of a Duck Dodgers product until the series launched in 2003.
Right. And we don't have a ton in much in terms of history on how this show came about. We don't have like the, well, this person talked to this person. But
I do.
Oh my God. Okay, Mark, then what happened?
So the origins of the series, it began as a potential feature film. They were going to make it as a movie at first. They brought in voice actor Bob Bergen to kind of provide all the lines to a mock-up trailer for a potential Duck Dodgers film. So does that mean that there is audio somewhere of Bob Bergen doing a Daffy Duck voice?
Probably. I mean, if you search far enough on the internet, you can find just about anything. So maybe somebody leaked it. You never know. But... then again, these are Warner Brothers people, so maybe they've been very tight on it.
So the trailer was made to pitch a feature film, but eventually that got turned into, this is a series pitch. Maybe they thought like a movie would have been too big for a character that hasn't had anything made in like roughly 25, 30 years.
And this is also the early 2000s that this is happening around. So... already there's a Looney movie in development, initially titled Looney Tunes the Movie. And that one was definitely pushing a lot more action and adventure sort of themes, at least in development. So basically, I imagine that a Duck Dodgers movie idea would be like, hey, maybe don't do this now. Maybe let's just sort of transition it to a TV pitch. You know, let's not get confused with the other one.
Yeah. Though... if it turns out this was a fully animated film, I'm going to be so mad. Like, god damn it. We got a fully animated theatrical Looney Tunes film, and it's a Duck Dodgers movie? I would have been all up in that as a kid.
That would have been so cool.
Oh my god.
That would have been amazing. I would have gone to see that opening weekend easily. You hear that, WB? People want, like, hand-drawn feature-length stuff that isn't just Teen Titans Go.
Did you notice that the most positive thing people had to say about Space Jam New Legacy was, I love the scenes where it was the Looney Tunes doing things in their own little 2D worlds? That should be a good hint.
Yeah, just...
maybe do that.
Yeah, just... except for the part when one of them was rapping.
Okay, not that. So... so yeah, so eventually they came up with the Duck Dodgers TV series. Now, the creative backbone of this series is amazing.
Yeah. Like, pretty much every episode of the first season and a lot of the majority of episodes were done by the four-man team of Spike Brandt, Tony Cervone, Paul Dini, and Tom Minton. Some very big guns when it comes to WB animation to this point. Dini had already done some more traditional superhero animation stuff. Minton had been doing a lot of Looney stuff over the last several years. Cervone and Brandt had been doing a lot of overseeing. And they all came together for this.
And especially in your episode, Jordan, having someone who spent the last 6-7 years constructing the foundation of DC animation, it helps. It helps to have someone like that on your side when you're doing an episode about the Green Lantern.
Yeah, Paul Dini, I think, is a big reason as to why mine works. But we will get into that one. I should mention that unlike a lot of previous WB animation ideas, this one was being pitched directly to Cartoon Network. And around this time, Cartoon Network is trying to build its primetime block. Now, with Cartoon Network, there's Cartoon Fridays in this era where the new episodes of the more traditional daytime shows, like, you know, Powerpuff Girls, Dexter's Lab, Billy and Mandy, Ed and Eddie, where new episodes of those would premiere. But at the same time, you also had them trying to build their primetime block, which was for slightly older kids, and also Toonami, which was the anime for even older kids. And around this time, they have hits in the primetime block with shows like, well, mostly coming from Jenny Karakovsky, Samurai Jack and his Star Wars, The Clone Wars. And they wanted more for that block. And so the Cartoon Network execs, I think they, at this point, they felt like a Looney show geared towards older kids in the same vein as some of the other channels of stuff like Disney's Buzz Lightyear of Star Command and Nick's Danny Phantom. That would probably be a nice hit. And so that's probably why they were drawn so much to Duck Dodgers, the series.
Mm-hmm. And it's so... and I think, well, it's funny, and you know that's the case because they would do an episode on Duck Dodgers that's a complete send-up of Samurai Jack. And, that's the only other classic episode that we're not covering because it's a send-up of Samurai Jack, there's no dialogue, I believe. So it's modeled after Samurai Jack. So it's definitely an interesting experiment.
Yeah, no, but that's very important because, you know, shows like Samurai Jack were getting ratings because they were appealing to the older kids who wanted more story-based stuff. And this is also right around the time that Avatar The Last Airbender would pop up on Nickelodeon, and more shows would embrace being more of a serial, more older kid-oriented sort of show. And Cartoon Network was separating those into the sort of the primetime blocks rather than just putting them on during the day. Mm-hmm. And the thing they were doing is around this time they were giving the 65 orders to the daytime shows and not really as much the primetime shows because those needed their own individual seasons in order to drum up ratings. They would be shown just like any other sort of like TV show like on cable or on like the major networks. Like, okay, it's a big event. Thursday night is going to a new Samurai Jack or something. And so they had to create scarcity.
Yes.
So they couldn't do a massive 65 episode order for one of those. And so that's why they only really went seasonal for Duck Dodgers and only gave them like 38-ish episode order.
And the block they would show Duck Dodgers on, it was retitled from Cartoon Fridays to just simply Fridays. Which had a very nice opening theme that I'll put in here because I love it so much.
Yeah!
Yeah.
This was a big deal when we were kids, because this was around the time that, actually, this is the year before Cartoon Network itself would be completely rebranded. Because obviously there was the June 12th, 2004 complete rebranding, where you woke up and the channel was completely different. That threw me a fucking curve. But rebranding Cartoon Fridays into just Friday is a hit sort of world for the cartoons to sort of watch their own things was a very good hook for the new Duck Dodgers show. And this was a pretty big hit for its first season or so. But it, eventually, as Fridays was sort of began to be phased out, and the concept of Cartoon Fridays began to be phased out, that Cartoon Network began to struggle with things to do with this show after around season one. And we'll get into that eventually. Yes. But yes, they would air this show starting in the fall of 2003, and they would, you know, do one a week, or at least I think a couple of weeks at some points. And they would press this as the new primetime cool show. And an audience showed up, but it may not have been as strong as the audience for some of their other original programming.
Yeah. But, I mean, we said this about, I think, last week or 2 weeks ago. For a Looney Tunes fan, this was the best thing ever. Like, oh my god, it's a weekly Looney Tunes animated series based on a classic cartoon that every Looney Tunes fan loves. It's like, you're getting that audience. Yes. You're getting the audience who adore Looney Tunes. And, It's a lot of fun, and we'll get into how much fun it is when we get to the episodes. So the voice talent for the series, should we go into that?
We could. I mean, I do want to get into the point where I don't want to get into sort of, because the key to establishing this show, because of course they wanted to build from the Duck Dodgers original shorts and the world of Duck Dodgers, the Eager Young Space Cadet, Marvin the Martian. What they wanted to do was they wanted to give this show more action and sci-fi based ideas as well as, you know, comedy based ones, which would honestly work better here than their next try at this. but the key to Duck Dodgers was establishing lore, lots and lots of lore, lots of world building. There was a whole cast of new characters as part of the Galactic Protectorate, the sort of Starfleet-esque sort of central heroic guild, and new Martian characters, new alien characters. A lot like the Buzz Lightyear series, this show took a simple blueprint, a simple character, and built a serious, well-developed, respectful sci-fi world around it, which took itself seriously while also being open to lots of humor. It's the mix between the Mint influence and the Dini influence, which I will get into in mind. They did a whole lot of world building, and they made this a very livable, a very expansive, a very respectful sci-fi world that can also inhabit, that can also, you know, have Looney Tunes characters. Okay, now we can talk about it.
All right, so before the main roles of the classic Looney Tunes characters that show up in this, it's Joe Lasky and Bob Bergen. So Joe Lasky voiced Duck Dodgers, Marvin the Martian, Beaky Buzzard, who shows up in the show apparently, Drake Darkstar, I wonder what that's a parody of. Hubie and Birdie showed up in an episode. Sheep and Muttley.
Oh, wow. Muttley? Is Dick Dastardly here too? Jeez. All right. Cool.
Evidently. Bob Bergen is here as Blinky Pig playing the eager young space kids.
I mean, at this point, both of these voices are pretty well refined. They're both really good at it. Joe Lasky is a great Daffy Duck. Is Marvin? I prefer Eric Bowes's, but it's still pretty good.
Yeah.
Obviously Bob Bergen's Porky is really good here, and a great voice of reason, and a really good foil for Daffy here. And then should we talk about some of the other gets here? Because there's some really cool ones.
Yeah, we got Michael Dorn.
Yeah.
As the Martian Centron robots, as well as playing Captain Long, as well as Plunkin Warrior.
Do I need to explain what significance Michael Dorn has in the sci-fi community.
Was he in a specific sci-fi show that a lot of people really liked?
Yes, Farscape. No. He was in Star Trek The Next Generation and Deep Space Nine as the beloved Commander Worf. He's... I'm glad he agreed to do this because he was coming off the end of Deep Space Nine and he probably wanted to stay away from sci-fi for a little bit, and he agreed to do this. And he's not the only Star Trek personnel that show up in these episodes that we're covering, which is very nice. So, but yeah, Michael Dorn is a really cool get. I also got John O'Hurley in here, best known as J. Peterman from Seinfeld. And he plays a very John O'Hurley character.
Yes. Now, you gotta love how this series brings together Star Trek fans and Seinfeld fans.
Yeah. And Wayne's World fans, because we also got Tia Carrere up in there.
Yes. Yes! Yes! That's for that name.
Yeah. But yeah, the key was being the writers and the production people being fans of the Looney Tunes and fans of sci-fi, especially Star Trek. And enough of the writers were well-versed in both. I mean, you know, it's definitely made for a lot of the sci-fi geeks that were hiding, that were growing up around this time, myself included. So, do you have any other voice acting notes?
Well, the guest stars they got on the show is freaking stacked.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of good ones in mind, but like they got people. Like, there's a lot of really cool ones, and maybe some in most of the other movies.
Also, yeah. Something nice to point out is that in the credits of each Dodd episode, the end credits, there's a special thanks credit to Chuck Jones.
Yay!
Which is very nice.
Very classy. Yeah. Okay.
Because they literally wouldn't be here without
exactly.
him.
Exactly. No, of course. They recognize that, and they give respect where it's needed. I also want to talk about the music here. Specifically the theme music. Because this was one of the things that always struck me when I was a kid. The Duck Dodgers theme song, they wanted to do something along the lines of Thunderball. You know, like a Tom Jones type theme. So, they got Tom Jones. In a time and space, if I... the universe survived. Doctors of the 24th and 1/2 century. It's like the old Mel Brooks story where he was trying to find a Frankie Lane type to sing the theme song to Blazing Saddles, and he actually got Frankie Lane. So yeah, they somehow got Tom Jones to do the official theme song, which was, again, 3 years removed from Emperor's New Groove. And this is when Tom Jones was in his novelties cover song phase of his career. Because on the UK charts, he had covers of Burning Down the House, Kiss, Mama Told Me Not to Come, and Islands in the Stream charting high in the charts in this era. Like, actual, like, number two, number four hits in the UK. So, like, Tom Jones was still making hits in, like, his 60s and 70s. Tom Jones kills it doing this theme. It sounds almost like they told him, okay, we want something like Thunderball, and he really killed it. He does his usual superfluous notes. He gets exactly what the show needs to be. He's Tom Jones. He gives them, you get what you pay for with him.
Also, because it's Tom Jones, it gets your attention immediately.
Yes.
Like if you're just channel surfing and like the mid-2000s, and you just hear the Duck Dodgers theme, you're going to stop for a second and go, what the hell was that?
Yeah.
Wait, was that Tom Jones? What the hell?
And speaking of what the hell was that, more eager-eyed music fans will be would probably like pause, listen to the theme, and go, is that the Flaming Lips doing the backing for him? And, yeah, Because as it was custom in this era to back up Tom Jones doing a cover with, you know, an already famous sort of band like the Cardigans or the Art of Noise, the Flaming Lips are doing the sort of orchestration and backing for him. Mark, I asked you last night if you had any knowledge of the Flaming Lips. You said vague.
Yeah. Like, they did, and I was thinking, they did a Sgt. Pepper cover album with Miley Cyrus a couple years
ago. Yes, they did. Flaming Lips, I would describe as, how would I describe them? They're a stoner rock band. They've been making records for about 40 years now. Started in the 80s, got some street cred in the 90s, and got some pretty like mainstream success in 2002 with their album Yoshimi Battles the Pink Robots, which is a very cool album. They have a song off that one called Do You Realize, which is probably their most well-known song. And at this point, in like 2000, 2003, they're as accessible of a name as they're going to be, because after this, they sort of dip back into sort of hallucinogenics for the next 20 years. They're also known as one of the coolest live bands to see, because they always had like very weird things to do on stage. Like the lead singer, Wayne Coyne, will like get into like a little plastic ball and sort of be carried around the stage. Matter of fact, one of the first concerts after the pandemic was Flaming Lips, and the entire audience was in those little plastic balls.
Oh!
So it was very cool.
I saw that.
Yeah.
I saw that.
That's the Flaming
Lips. That actually makes sense.
And you know what? No COVID cases. So, like, you know, they're very efficient. But yeah, no, this is sort of at the tip of their mainstream. And they get asked, hey, do you want to do the theme song to Duck Dodgers with Tom Jones? And who's going to say no to that? So Wayne Coyne and Stephen Drozd are credited with the arrangement of the theme music. And altogether, it's a pretty cool track with some of the trademark spacey weirdness that the Flaming Lips were known for in this era. But palatable, you know, for Cartoon Network for kids. It's a cool theme song, and there's sort of cool undertones are around for a lot of the show.
Yeah. And the opening sequence is also very nice, because a lot of it is just the pencil drawings of moments of animation of Duck Dodgers and Cadets.
Yeah.
And like, that's the type of stuff you can do with the 2D animated shows. You can do these cool pencil drawn intros and it actually works.
Right.
There's these nice kind of matte painting designs of each of the characters as they're introduced as the characters. So something we did bring up here is that in this show, Duck Dodgers, Daffy Duck is playing Duck Dodgers. Porky Pig is playing Cadet. Marvin Martian is playing Marvin the Commander.
They're playing roles.
They're playing roles. And that's cool. You know, it's different than any of the other Looney Tunes shows at this time.
And it's just, again, this entire show is doused in cool. And a lot of the coolness just flows through it and it just works. Do we have any more background stuff to go into before we get into the actual thing?
The show would win 2 Emmys.
Yeah.
It would win one for sound design and another for Joe Lasky's performance.
Cool.
In the program, which is well deserved.
Oh, so. Yeah, definitely. Okay. So let's get into the first episode we have on the slate here, which is The Green Lantern. This is out on October 18th, 2003. In theaters on this day were Matrix Revolutions and Scary Movie 3. You know, eclectic mix in theaters. Okay. The number one song in the U.S. The number one song this week were kind of, you know, passe. The number one song in the U.S. was Baby Boy by Beyonce featuring Sean Paul, or Sean John if you're Adrian Brody. And number one in the UK, not much better, Where Is the Love by Black Eyed Peas.
Oh.
I mean, I can't really tell you which one better, because Baby Boy is not my favorite Beyonce song, but also Where Is the Love is a Black Eyed Peas song. I would kind of go with that one by default, because I think I've heard it more often. But I will add here, the number two song in the UK is better than both of them, because it's I Believe in a Thing Called Love by The Darkness. I believe in a thing called love, just as tired of my heart. There's a chance we can make it now, we'll be looking for the sun yourself. I believe in a thing called love. Which is an awesome song. That I will go to bat for any day of the week. Okay. Green Lantern was written by the team of Brant, Servone, Danny, and Minton. What's interesting about this episode, and about, you know, this sort of joint venture between DC and Warner Brothers Animation, is that DC would essentially make this episode canon. Like, a lot of DC people have regarded Daffy Duck as an honorary Green Lantern. And they even went so far as to include Daffy Duck as the Green Lantern in the third Lego Batman game as a unlockable character. Which was a very big deal, because they also got Joel Askey to do it. And, you know, I'm glad that they did that. I'm glad they made the ask, you know?
Yeah, because that would wind up being his last voice acting role for Daffy.
Yes.
Would be that game.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very cool. And immediately I went on the PlayStation Store to see if I can buy that game, and I can. So I may buy that game.
Cool.
To unlock it, because hell yeah, I would totally want to play as Daffy Duck.
I think we all would want to play as Daffy Duck. But yeah, no, I mean, the DC people have taken this episode pretty seriously, and, you know, Daffy Duck is an official Green Lantern as far as this is concerned. So, okay. So this one begins with a pretty good setup. You know, Daffy going around with Porky running errands while Porky carries everything for him. And Daffy's sort of rationale is, with enough credit, we could get you promoted from cadet to stooge or even lackey. And the concept here is it's Daffy Duck picking up his dry cleaning, but they give him the wrong suit, which is Hal Jordan's Green Lantern outfit by mistake. And I like the little gag where he's looking around the little eyepiece and going, who knows what this little weirdo's into? Which, hooray, 7 o'clock.
And yeah, which he says that line and then he takes out a glowing ring. So I'm sure that didn't help things.
No, it like, didn't.
Oh, God.
This guy must be on a lot of ecstasy.
Where is this ring?
Okay. All right. You were going to go more dirtier. Okay.
Yes, I was. But I'm going with your ecstasy look.
Let's go with drugs instead. That's the safer option.
Yeah.
Just hitting a whatever. Okay. I like the fact that it's 2 minutes into the piece and we've already gotten into the hook of Daffy is a Green Lantern. Like, we're not, like, hiding it around. It's not like, oh, you have to become this or something. Like, it's 2 minutes in. Oh, yeah, he's got the ring. He's you know, he's all bulked up. And we get some really well-done action and hero stuff flying around, intercut with good comedy. Like a great John O'Hurley read of, I really love that dress. On you, of course. I'm trying to do the John O'Hurley voice without sounding like Zap Brannick. It's very difficult. I had snoozing. And again, I love Daffy. This is a great gag where Daffy proclaims himself the first of his species to be given the gift of flight, all while several tired ducks fly by behind him. It's great. Okay. There is a very tired Daffy giving Porky a wedgie joke here. But this also leads to Porky knowing all about the Green Lantern Corps, which is pretty cool. Like, yeah, he's of course he's a nerd. I think in another episode he talks about Dragon Ball Z. So, like, Porky knows these things. It's okay.
Yeah.
This is also the point where Daffy just sort of strings Porky onto a nearby flagpole hanging by his underpants, which he's like, well, thank God these are the strongest type they've got.
So, Porky's a flagpole setup?
Goddamn you. I'm not sick, but I-
yes, Porky is the sad sweetheart of the rodeo. Oh, in the same episode, we've got The Darkness, The Flaming Lips, and Harvey Danger. What other fringe music ones could we get into?
Tune in to find out.
Yeah. But yeah, we get an appearance here as Daffy's going around looking for women of a very Looney Tunes-esque dog design. And I love this bit where he throws a ball off the balcony and the dog goes after it, then realizes the dog is plummeting several stories. It's great. And also on the ground, we have another Irish policeman, because why change now?
I just love to read a puppy, and then the cop faints.
Yeah, that was odd. Also, and this is where the voice cast begins to really show up, hey, Greta Lyle is the concerned dog owner, with a very Greta Lyle voice there.
Yeah. Which, I feel that could have been paced a little bit better, because it's literally just Daffy saying, well, hope you get your investigation, and then immediately hard cut to, that's the guy who got my puppy!
Yeah.
Well,
they have a lot to fit into this episode, so I kind of get it.
Yeah, true.
Because literally, right after this, Daffy is summoned to the Green Lantern's planet, and we are whisked into a pretty respectful Green Lantern adventure, featuring Tara Strong as Cat Matui and John DiMaggio just kind of doing his Bender voice as Kilowog.
Clearly John DiMaggio.
Yeah. Also, Joe Alasky is in here as a sort of comical Tomari, which, okay.
Yeah. Also, I love the moment where Daffy thinks he's being sent there to get a celebration. It's like, oh, your hero's here! And he flies right into the ground.
That's great.
And then just, ow. Just, lovely.
It's great. I don't like that these characters are kind of say their names a lot so the kids know who they are. Like, come quick, Cat Matui. Isn't that right, Kilowog? Like, it seems very studio mandated.
Well, because at this time, there wasn't a Green Lantern TV show.
Well, they were on Justice League Unlimited, I think.
But it wasn't every week. It was like a few episodes.
Well, they were on there a lot. But I digress. And as Kilowog sort of explaining a lot of things about the attacking robots on the Green Lantern planet, Daffy has a great line. You know, I'd really like to help, but I tee off a Spider-Man at 6 a.m. That is a great line.
To quote a Spider-Man film from a character that is based off of the Looney Tunes.
Is he allowed to say that?
Legally?
It's great.
It's fantastic.
But yeah, we get about 0.5 seconds of some other human Green Lanterns like Guy Gardner and John Stewart before they're all teleported into a vortex. Because the whole thing is that, like, you know, all of the Green Lanterns except for Cat Matui, Kilowog, and Daffy, and also Gant, who is just saving, and they're all teleported to another planet by Sinestro.
And Chip.
Hmm? What?
And Chip.
Oh, right. Yeah, Chip. Chip shows up in a little bit. Chip. Who, as Daffy goes, what's got Alvin Shorts in a knot? Which is another great thing. But they tell us very early on that this plot is, you know, the doing of Sinestro, played by John DeLancey, the second Star Trek actor involved with this show, because that's fucking Q.
Huh.
Another very, a fan favorite recurring Star Trek Next Generation character. And he's great on that as well. So, I'll get into his Sinestro eventually, but yeah, no, all the Green Lanterns, except for the couple that, including Daffy, are whisked away, and initially the Green Lanterns think that Daffy is a part of it, and Ganthet, who Daffy just saved from being crushed by some rocks, goes, this creature is not evil. Stupid, yes, perhaps very stupid, but not evil, which is a great line. And here I sort of figured that this was a very respectful Green Lantern story just constructed around Daffy. And I love how these characters sort of are still very respectful and serious, but lean into the comedy in just trying to deal with Daffy. Like convincing Daffy to take the sort of Trojan robot by making him think it's the brave option. That's the whole thing. Okay, one of these robots has to... we have a malfunctioning one. We have to bring it back in with somebody inside to infiltrate Sinestro's base and take some things apart. It involves someone being small enough to be in there and also someone stupid enough, I mean brave enough, to to go and do it. Real quick, we do have a bit where, which is also very much Paul Dini flexing his Green Lantern knowledge, where Kilowog suggests that Daffy leads them in the Green Lantern Oath, which is a great comedy setup, almost classic, because we know he doesn't know it, and they don't. And so we already know something funny is going to happen there.
In blackest day or brightest night, watermelon, cantaloupe, yada yada, a superstitious and cowardly lot, with liberty and justice for all.
Then again, maybe I should lead us.
Which is very death.
Yeah.
Okay, and here we get a little bit more of Sinestro explaining his big evil plan. And I gotta say, John DeLancey as Sinestro is great, and does some really good reads and a great villain performance. But he's designed and at times written somehow like a Billy and Mandy character. Like, really? I was getting the vibe of almost a very similar to General Scar, ironically voiced by another Star Trek actor, Armin Shimerman. So, like...
I guess with Star Trek actors, they always go to Cartoon Network shows.
Well...
Did Nimoy ever go on, like, Fairly Odd Parents or something? Like...
I don't think so. Could you imagine Shatner showing up in some Nickelodeon show?
It's SpongeBob. Now, SpongeBob. Why?
Who lives in a pile under the sea?
Lordy.
Jesus. Shatner. Yeah, he'll be in space by the time this comes out. And I think it's going to be a long, long time. Can somebody else switch seats? I'm Leonard Nimoy. Keep watching the skis. Skies. Skies.
No. World needs comedy.
The world needs laughter. Yes. This episode does some really cool things with Green Lantern mythos, like Daffy using his ring to create a little shoe that jams the door with, and like it's very respectful. Okay, this is definitely what a Green Lantern can do. It's just doing it through Looney Tunes ideologies, and so it's respectful to both Looney Tunes and Green Lantern, DC Comics. So I think it's just the perfect union of Paul Dini's DC action sensibilities and Tom Minton's comedy sensibilities, as well as the other two. So. And then again, these also the Green Lantern characters are perfectly at home in a looser comedy. There's some great reads from John DiMaggio as Kilowog. You know, it's a looser project that they still fit into. And it works because, you know, at this point, the Justice League shows were also a little bit looser at times, even when doing action scenes. So it all just fits together in this.
Yeah, it really does. Yeah. And I just love how first of all, I love how apparently according to Kilowog, the idea of doing the Green Lantern shoe trick is something that they all do.
Yeah, of course. Which also gives you the idea that like maybe these Green Lantern characters also have very loony ideologies that they're now being able to tap into because Daffy is here. So it gives you the idea that it gives you more round. They're well rounded. If you think, oh yeah, they probably have these sort of comedy thoughts all the time.
Yeah, they probably do funny stuff with their Green Lantern powers. Yeah. They try to be noble when they have to, but, you know, sometimes it's nice to conjure up, like, I don't know, anything you ever want.
Exactly. Sometimes you can just do a shoe. It works. It's practical.
But they can't conjure up a good movie anyways.
Yeah. I love the little gag here as Daffy sort of breaks in and starts messing with controls, and then he makes the robots that pursue him have a high school rivalry. And it's, you know, the Crimson Techies, eh? I hate you. By the way, all the robots are voiced by Dee Bradley Baker. So that's pretty cool. At least he doesn't have to do Daffy. And then, of course, Daffy ends up getting captured by Sinestro. And Sinestro asks him, did you come here alone because you were the bravest Green Lantern or the most foolish? And Daffy. And Daffy goes... That question's come up before. I'll get back to you in a day or two. So Daffy's just really well written in this. And the writers clearly know Daffy and how to write him, because as Sinestro explains his evil plan of using all of the sleeping and powerless Green Lanterns to fuel his sort of vortex device. And he, of course, he does the whole join me and together we can be the most powerful people in the universe. And the writers have Daffy immediately agree to joining forces with Sinestro, which even Sinestro is surprised by.
There may even be a place for someone like you in my new reality. Join forces with me or be obliterated.
Okay.
Don't be such a sanctimonious fool. You don't realize the... Did you say okay?
Yeah, sounds good to me. Ground floor of the new cosmic order, baby.
Really?
Oh, wait. You had the whole hero-villain seduction speech worked up, didn't you?
No. Well, maybe a little. You see, most heroes aren't so easily swayed.
And Daffy even goes, oh, wait, you had the whole hero-villain seduction speech worked up, didn't you? Well, maybe a little.
Like, well, I am, well.
And also we get a nice cutaway to some fun action with the other Green Lanterns. Chip ends up throwing an explosive acorn at one of the robots, which leads to probably my favorite line in the whole piece, where Dee Bradley Baker goes, ah, cute little nut. What's that supposed to do? Give me high cholesterol?
Boom.
It's great. Daffy eventually figures out, hey, wait a minute. I think it's the more noble idea to keep, you know, with the Green Lanterns, because he was given this sort of choice anyway. And so Daffy honestly works here as a Green Lantern because he's relentless. He always keeps trying, as Sinestro is trying to crush him inside that. And it makes his eventual victory in the action sequence against Sinestro, using a clock to wake up all the trapped Green Lanterns, so satisfying. Even if he is a scoundrel, even if it is kind of like, you know, very selfish, he still is able to do this and make a sort of world-saving move because he appreciates the respect and the tradition of the Green Lanterns. Some people might even say it's an un-Daffy move. I think it's a very Daffy move.
Well, yeah, because, okay, let's be real here. Daffy would never agree to share power over the entire universe with somebody. Like, eventually, he would go against Sinestro, so...
Yeah. No, it works. And so, you know, everything gets wrapped up. Sinestro is sort of sucked into his own vortex machine. The other Green Lanterns come in, save the day, and all the other Green Lanterns are very grateful for the whole thing. And then after the victory, Hal Jordan shows up, voiced by Kevin Smith, DC fan and one-time Superman scriptwriter.
We must go to the same cleaners. Can I have my ring back?
Looking good, hero boy. Heads up.
Thank you, little black duck. Oh yeah, that's way better. Saddle up, Green Lanterns! Away!
Which is so freaking cool.
It is. I feel like...
It's so cool.
Because he's a big fan of both the Looney Tunes and DC Comics. So when he heard that this was around, he was like, oh my god, I want to play Hal Jordan. And of course they're like, yeah, sure, let's get Kevin Smith in here. And he does a pretty good job. And it is a pretty cool get.
It's a very cool get. Also, I think that makes Duck Dodgers my introduction to Kevin Smith.
Really? Might have been mine, too. I don't know.
Because he hasn't done many kid movies. So
no, not at all.
The closest thing.
And of course, you know, it's Hal Jordan returning Duck Dodgers' outfit, which doesn't fit him, and gets them all in their respective clothes again. And this has a great ending, which, after all of the Green Lanterns are very grateful, thank you for all your help, they all take off and back to their own planet, and Daffy is stuck without a ride, and he's like, I'm sure the cadet will save me, and Porky is still hanging by his shorts on the flagpole, a bed on it, which is great. So a really satisfying show, with some excellent action that took itself seriously enough for the DC lore, we're also having a ton of fun. And giving Daffy a lot of in-character stuff to do that still works for him as, you know, Daffy. It's a really exciting one. I could have used a little bit more Looney-type humor, but that's really not the kind of humor this series was going for. So I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, this is just so darn cool.
Yeah.
I mean, I will say, as a Duck Dodgers episode, I mean, it's not, I mean, yes, there is Duck Dodger stuff in it, but if it feels more like a Daffy Duck cartoon as a Green Lantern than it does a Duck Dodgers episode, which is fine, but, you know, I just like the Dodgers. But it's just so much fun to watch.
Yeah.
I mean, the plot is written like a DC animated plot, which, again, you have Paul Dini there, so I'm sure he knows how to do this. So it's just a DCAU episode animated in the Warner Bros. Style, because it's not their animated like they're from the DCAU, but, you know, it's in that style. And just, it's just fun to see Daffy Duck be roped into this.
Yeah.
It's just it's a good premise, and they utilized it very well.
No, I really enjoyed this one. I have minor issues, but I think it was just a really good, not only for the Looney Tunes, but for DC, for Green Lantern stuff. I give it a 4.5 out of 5.
I'm also giving it a 4.5 out of 5.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Okay.
So now we get into the FUD.
Oh my. What a
concept. The FUD. What the FUD is the FUD, you may ask? Well, FUD was released on August 14, 2004. In terms of songs that were charting on this week, number one on the adult contemporary charts was This One's for the Girls by Martina McBride.
Okay.
And number two was 100 Years by Five for Fighting.
Okay.
And in regards to world events, the Australian women's 4x100-mile freestyle relay team of Alice Mills, Elizabeth Lenton, Patricia Thomas, and Jody Henry smashed the world record, take gold, in 3 hours, 35 minutes, and 94 seconds at the Athens Olympics.
I know!
Yes. And in terms of who was married that day, and this was great.
I saw this.
It's fantastic.
This is so perfect.
First of all, I love... So, it's... Okay, so John O'Hurley got married on this day.
Who's in the fucking show?
Who's in the show. And my sword, because it's like, oh, you know, he's a sci-fi actor. It also says Dancing with the Stars contestant.
Oh, yeah. He was on the very first season of Dancing with the Stars.
Right. He was Dancing with the Stars. And how far did he get? Did he get pretty
He got pretty second place and lost to Kelly O'Hara. And then because the first season of Dancing with the Stars was so popular, they did a rematch between Kelly and John O'Hurley. And I believe John O'Hurley won the rematch. Don't quote me on that. But this was like the very first season of Dancing with the Stars, before it became what it is now. Before everybody in the U.S. Perfected their Bruno Tonioli impressions. You were fast! You were furious! You were up and down! And I give you a 10 and it was amazing! You were it for the fire in my lungs! Len, I didn't like it. The Paso Doble, it's just my Michael Caine. You don't need to do the Paso Doble.
Is it really that different of a voice?
The Paso Doble, Master Bob. You were only supposed to do the tango. Mark and I have a running gag from like 15 years ago. Yes, it's time. Mark and I have a running gag where, because, you know, we all lost it with the Stars. And there was one show where Bruno Tonioli was giving a 7 to pretty much everybody. And he just did. There was one where he was trying not to look too awkward. But the judges' scores. Carrie Inaba, 8. Boom. Len Goodman, 8. Boom. Bruno Tonioli, 7. Like, dude, you're not helping. They were close to like a 24, which would have been a good score. And you're like, this is all I've got. He's toned it down now. He knows it's 7. Like he used to, but back in like 2005 or 2006, it would be 7. You know, he's really nailing it.
Oh my gosh. And there's also the other moment that we loved with
oh my god,
Tom Bergeron.
There was an episode. I think I know what you're referring to.
Yeah.
There was an episode where this was like 2011, and they got the band LMFAO to perform. Is this the one?
Yes, yes. Yeah.
They got the band LMFAO to perform, and they were doing party rock with them and everything. And Bruno basically jumped on top of this of the like the desk and started just dancing furiously. And as and then at the end of that, they cut to Tom Bergeron. And Tom Bergeron has said contemporarily that he's proudest of this line that he made up on the spot. And he goes,
LMFAO with the bonus dancing assist from Bruno WTF Tonioli.
Do you see why we love Tom Bergeron so much?
Tom Bergeron's the fucking greatest. He should have gotten far further than he did in Masked Singer. He was knocking out actual musicians. He's the best. I grew up on America's Funniest Home Videos, so like I
don't know. Oh yeah. That.
So yeah. In conclusion, Tom Bergeron rocks and Sabbath.
My god.
Okay, anyway, on with your episode. So, I'm sorry.
So the FUD was directed by actually, all the episodes, I don't think we mentioned this, all the episodes of this show pretty much were directed by Spike Brandt and Tony Cervoni.
Yeah, they're the showrunners.
Written by them, as well as Paul Dini and Tom Min. They're pretty much all written directed by the same crew.
Yeah.
Which must have been that's a very small writer's room, if just them.
Yeah.
It's just a small table, four chairs, board.
What do we do?
Go. So... And there's a fun, interesting notes here. Bill West guest stars.
Yes.
So, in our previous episode, we had the previous voice actor, Daffy Duck. This one, we have the previous voice actor, Bugs Bunny from Space Jam. Yeah. So Billy West guest stars as, well, who else but the FUD.
Yes.
As well as Mother FUD in particular.
Yes, exactly.
And, oh boy. I hope Billy West got paid incredibly well for this episode, considering what goes down in it.
Needless to say, he got a lot of motherfucking money.
For every FUD laugh, he got like $200.
And there's a lot in here. So.
Oh my gosh. So. So a ship based on Star Trek, led by Captain Law. Oh, now I get it.
Yeah. It's Worf essentially playing Captain Sisko.
Yeah.
From Deep Space Nine.
So they're going through space, and they faced a tragedy, which is that Fongs is out of Mushu chicken. He's like, oh damn it! All right, get the beef and broccoli. Also, make sure you get those crispy noodles I like. I'm like, and I agree. Based on the place, the noodles can make or break a Chinese restaurant.
Oh my god, I literally just had Chinese a couple days ago, so.
Nice. So, the Captain Law is just saying, listen, we need to get that Chinese food, because going through space would be unbearable without it. And then we get, like, a little, like, Chinese music playing as they speed off into space. And they were introduced to these, why not? They were introduced to these pyramid-like ships that bring themselves on board. Which, wait, hold on, pyramid-like figures get on a spaceship of a cartoon show that isn't an anime? Oh no, it's Yu-Gi-Oh! This whole series is doomed! Let's blame its ending on this and only this! I'd like to thank Lil Kariba for reminding me what the pyramid figure in Yu-Gi-Oh! Still looks like, because I sure as hell haven't been watching that show in years.
Yeah.
So, the captain goes into the quarters, I guess, and this purple pyramid thing opens up, a purple light shines out, and it has the ability to turn everyone into Elmer Fudd.
What a concept.
That's great.
Like,
that's fantastic.
It's from a comedy standpoint, from a sci-fi standpoint. That is fantastic. I read up, and this is basically conceptually the FUD, the alien race of the FUD, which is a funny thing to say out loud. is basically based on a combination of the Flood from Halo and the Borg from Star Trek. Though I also think there are little bits of the Brood from X-Men and the Thing from John Carpenter's The Thing in there as well, just with less body horror.
So, meanwhile, back on a random planet, a Duck Dodgers cartoon is going on.
Yeah,
so Marvin's taking a planet in the name of Mars. Duck Dodgers like that. Get a nice back and forth comedy routine in the vein of the Duck Dodgers shorts, except this time they play a game of finders versus keepers, because Martin Martian's just saying, listen, Dodgers, in the treaty of finders versus keepers, I get this planet. And then Dodgers just takes the treaty from Cadet, and he's looking at it. We just have narration of Dodgers going, if I look at this paper long enough, maybe they won't know that I can't read.
And I love this running gag.
At the Mark the Martian, like, why is it that paper so long? Can he not read? And just go to Cadet going, I know. He's not fooling anybody. I know he can't read. He returned those how to read tapes like on last Christmas.
It's such a good running gag.
Yes, Dodgers then destroys the treaty, citing a loophole, to which she says, how about that, Judge Judy?
Okay.
And so Modern Martian is shooting Duck Dodgers. Of course, Dodgers has a jetpack in this one, which leads to Dodgers holding Marvin up at an incredible height. And Marvin is freaking out about this. Dodgers is like, what is it? Why are you freaking out? And then he says,
he's scared of heights?
Yes, he's scared of heights. And he says, the reason he's scared of heights is that Marvin's father, when he was a baby, hung him by a balcony just to impress the paparazzi. Okay.
That's character development, man.
It's also a 2000s Michael Jackson reference.
Oh!
Remember that?
So, what? Why go there?
That's what I was thinking. Like, we're making a reference to that moment where Michael Jackson in the early 2000s, when his son Blanket was born, he was held in a hotel room, and he showed the baby to the paparazzi and then dangled the baby briefly over the banister. Everyone freaked out. Michael then quickly took the baby away, and that became the hottest news story for a month.
Which means this is the second, like, this is the second project in 2 years to insinuate that Michael Jackson is an alien after Men in Black 2.
How'd it go?
Zed, the Joloks are gone and the treaty is signed.
Good work.
Zed, what about that position you promised me in Men in Black?
Still working on the Alien Affirmative Action Program. I'll keep you posted.
Wait a minute, that's not what you promised me.
You're breaking up.
Zed?
Can't hear you.
Hello?
I'll call you back.
I can be Agent M. Zed, you...
I can be Agent M.
It's one of the better parts of that movie, honestly.
Yeah, so... And that's, what, reference 2 out of 100? Okay, we'll get into it. There's a lot of references in this episode. So, anyways, so Duck Dodgers just briefly drops Marvin and then captures him by the end of his shoe, which, okay, dick move, but whatever. It's Dappy.
Yeah.
So, eventually, Marvin the Martian and Dodgers fight over the jetpack. The jetpack breaks in two. They fly off in different directions. Oh, there's a little bit of a sound effect from the original Duck Dodgers cartoon where each of the characters are like, you know, the moment in Duck Dodgers where they're winding up their blow-up machines to take out the other person, there's a little bit of that sound effect as they're flying through the air, which is very nice. So, Cadet saves Dodgers and Marvin. It's kind of edited awkwardly, though, so like, he kind of, like, flies up, has his hands out, we then cut to a wide shot, cutbacks and he has them. I don't know. It could have been edited a little bit better. They find, so there's explosion and they find a new mineral that hasn't been discovered before, and of course Duck Dodgers immediately thinks it's a wishing rock, which, Daffy, you've already experienced a wishing mechanism. It wasn't good.
Didn't go well for you.
Yeah, it didn't go well. And it doesn't go for... Well, at first we think it doesn't go well for him because the rock shocks both Duck Dodgers, Cadet, and Marvin the Martian. But as we find out, that actually was a good thing.
Yeah.
So we cut back to IQ on Earth, who was, the guy who sends Duck Dodgers on his missions, him.
Designed exactly the same as in the shorts, yeah.
And because he didn't have many lines near the Duck Dodgers short, his voice in this is different, but it's like, it's fine, because like he only had like two lines in the original cartoon, so. Yeah. So IQ on Earth discovers that the FUD has affected Captain Long's ship. So he then calls the Queen of Mars, who is not happy because Dodgers broke the first treaty, which was the Finders versus Keepers treaty. And because a ship is coming to Mars, it also broke that treaty. I just love the reading of IQ going like, what second treaty? We didn't break a second treaty. And then the Queen of Mars just goes, roll the tape. And it just shows Dodgers
destroying, just obliterating it.
Obliterating it, which just cries, Dodgers. Which is his catchphrase. But it works.
Dodgers.
So eventually, Queen of Mars hangs up as she says, listen, because you did this, we're going to take over your ship. So the Martian crew is sent to get the ship. Also, the Martian commander is also voiced by Billy West.
Yeah.
Which is nice. So the Mars crew, they go to the ship, take the ship, but they too become infected by the FUD.
Which is very funny, because whenever someone's infected by the FUD, they grow an Elmer FUD face and start like doing the thing. Which is, again, both horrifying and funny at the same time.
Yes. And what I love is, depending on who it is, it's either Billy West doing the Elmer FUD laugh, or it's the voice actor doing the Elmer FUD laugh of that character, which is just great.
Tia Carrere does it.
It must have been a fun career highlight for these voice actors.
Yeah.
So we come back to Dodgers and Marvin the Martian bickering as they each get a message saying they must return to their home planets due to the spreading of the FUD.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, on Earth and Mars, we get scenes of each of these planets getting affected by the FUD. Farmers get it. John Hurley gets it. The news reporter who's reporting on it gets it. We find out that IQ got infected as Dappy is somehow able to barge through the heavily guarded doors because John Hurley thought that the FUD zombie army was out to get them. And then Duck Dodgers has a line of just, hey, you have to work on those doors. The handle's a little bit stuck. That's just perfect Daffiness.
This scene also has like a great exchange between John O'Hurley and Daffy where it says, how did you get through the FUD unaffected? I have absolutely no idea. Just the way that he says that.
Yes. So Daffy just goes around to IQ, and at first he doesn't realize that IQ has the FUD. Just talking to him normal. He's like, wow, you're really happy. I've never seen you this happy.
He's my friend.
My friend. And then Porky just runs in, has this great look of panic on his face, like, Doctor, what are you doing? He's like, well, I'm just having a little buddy here. It's like, yeah, just having my buddy, IQ.
Creepy.
And then immediately Daffy just notices IQ has the buddy, screams, like, get him off me, get him off.
It's great.
And then, meanwhile, on Mars, we also see it's also infected by the FUD. Even the Queen of Mars is affected by the FUD, to which I sent a picture.
Yes.
Because the Queen of Mars doesn't have a mouth. Because none of the Martians on Mars have a mouth because Martin has a mouth, which is a very nice creative choice. So there's just a visual of the Queen of... Because it's a pan up, and they designed the Queen of Mars to be rather appealing. So it's just a pan up, and it's just Elmer's face. Just doing the laugh. And what was your response, Jordan, when I sent you that photo?
I said, why is it always Elmer with these things? Because we already had Fadana, and now we have this.
Yes, sexy alien Princess Fudd doesn't exist. Sexy alien Princess Fudd exists. Oh, God. And this horrifying image drives Marvin to scream, Mommy. He's so frightened by this. He's like, get me the hell out of here. And eventually, they call each other over our video phone.
Yeah. The original Zoom.
Yes. And they realize they're the only ones who've been immune to it, and they have no idea why. Twitch, Duck Dodgers actually says, maybe it was The Rock. And then Marvin's like, of all the stupid ideas. And then Cadet's like, no, actually, he's got a point. Which,
yeah,
I feel like that happens every once in a while. Like, Duck Dodgers actually does have, like...
Yeah,
I mean...
Occasionally, he comes out with a good answer.
Yes. So, they decide to work together. So, they go back to the planet where they were having the bickering. And they have this mechanism that when it engages, it will suck in the the antidote, the immunity to the FUD. So they just decide to recreate how they did it the first time. So it's just Duck Dodgers with the jetpack dropping, and he turns on the jetpack the wrong way, so he gets blasted with fire and brimstone that lands into the rock. It doesn't do anything. It doesn't set it off. So there's just, so Marvin just says, no, try harder. Then as Dappy's falling, he's just like, yeah, I'm trying my best. And then just lands into the rock. It works. And that's what gets him the immunity, electricity. And Dappy getting hurt is never not funny.
Oh yeah, Dappy getting hurt is the best. Especially just like with just random smoke-charred Dappy.
So they decide, so Martin says, hey, we have to work together for this, and then...
Which is very cool.
Yeah. And Duck Dodgers immediately like, no, I'm not going to do this because we're sworn enemies. And then Martin's like, no, listen, like, we have to do this because, like, the entire world's in danger. And Dappy just immediately goes, you know what? Teamwork. We'll do teamwork. In fact, we're more than a team. We're a family. Again, Dappy just goes insane. It's like, okay, Marvin, you're the mommy. Porky, you're the baby. Let's do this.
Porky's like, I really have to have him stop putting me in diapers. Which, again, something we don't want to know the tech context of.
A question. Well, yeah, so Cadet says, why is Dodgers always trying to get me into a diaper? Which is a question that can be answered with a simple Google search, Cadet.
Oh.
What
kind of weird stuff is he into?
Yeah, so they have their plan. So we go back to them in the, Dodgers' ship. They're flying into the FUD's very nicely designed pyramid design of the ship, by the way. It's very nicely done. Like you can tell this just a design they had lying around. Because, like, it doesn't represent Elmer FUD at all. But it's just very nicely done. And they find it, and it was just cut inside the ship. And, you know, and they're still talking about the teamwork thing, the family thing. And I love what we cut to. It's, you know, Dodgers is in the ship, and Marvin is second in command, and Cadet is in a booster seat.
Yeah, that's a great cut.
That's a nice continuation of the gag.
Yeah.
So we transition inside of the pyramid, and they get in a la Wizard of Oz, like completely Wizard of Oz send up of the OEO, the guards from Wizard of Oz. But because they're Elmers, it's an Elmer Fudd type. Which, okay, so I know it was like, it's like a bunch of voice actors doing that, because it's not just Billy West going over and over again doing different
takes. No,
they
got a whole bunch.
And then we're introduced to the Mother Fudd.
This is great.
It's Kang the Conqueror.
Yeah.
That's what it is. It's a big Elmer Fudd head. It's
you mean
red.
It's MODOK?
Right. It's MODOK. Got the wrong. Wait. Kang the Conqueror is a TMNT.
No, that's Krang.
That's Krang.
Kang the Conqueror is Jonathan Majors.
Right. Comic book reference. It's a comic book reference. So, a Marvel comic reference, which, hey,
yeah,
that's funny. She knows what DC. So, Dodgers, Cadet, and Marvin are watching this, and there's a great line from Dodger saying, you know, this reminds me of the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, which, one, he can say that legally?
Yeah.
All right. And just the line of, just add some baton throwers, and you've got a timeless classic.
It's a great line. Really.
And then Cadet has an idea, and it's literally the Wizard of Oz idea, to the point where they bring up how the Cadet think of this idea, and he just says, oh, I watched the Wizard of Oz. And Marvin has no idea what the Wizard of Oz is, so Duck Dodgers just says, oh, yeah, Wizard of Oz, he was our...
military hero.
Military. right here, I wrote, boy, this sure short loves its references. And right when I say that, Duck Dodgers goes.
No copyright infringement. This is a tribute, people.
That's great.
It's a great line.
That's fucking great.
Jesus. But yeah, this is probably the good point to mention that Billy West's Elmer voice is still very good. He gets the gravel of Elmer's voice pretty well.
And he gets the laugh down good, too.
He's better.
So... Mother Fudd's plan is to take over the entire solar system by taking over the sun. Cause sure.
You know what? Daffy should have just gone ahead and let him try that. Because, you know, how do they take over the sun? They're going to just fly into it and burn up. You know, it's the Indiana Jones thing of why doesn't he just let them do it themselves and die?
Which, the sun? I mean... Why not just try to get every last wabbit in the universe?
that's a good... I mean, maybe it's because there isn't a lot of bugs representation on Duck Dodgers.
True, there isn't. But you'd imagine, like, every single voice actor has to say, kill the wabbit.
Oh,
kill
that
the wabbit.
That would have been great.
Yeah, and so as soon as... I said it because as soon as Elmer Fudd says, yeah, I'm sorry, as Fudd says this, we then cut to, you know, IQ and John Hurley and the Queen of Mars saying the sun. And it's just, it like an Elmer Fudd tone. It's
great.
So great. So, Mother Fudd reveals that how they're sending the signal out is through this, antenna that's, like, atop the ship. So Dodgers, Cadet, and Marvin get there, and in order for the plan to work, Marvin has to climb the tall tower to attach the immunity to the signal. So Marvin has to get over his fear of heights, and Dodgers has to increase the power by reading the instructions. So he has to get over his fear of not being able to read.
They do really good with arcs in this one. First of all, the way that Daffy convinces Marvin through his fear of heights is doing it with a very Animaniacs-esque do-it-for-the-Gipper joke, which is great. And then Daffy teaching himself to read by, like, memorizing the book on tape sort of recordings that Porky gave him. And it's not an educational thing for kids. It's purely comedic and thematic. It's funny. It's like Charlie Day and Always Sunny being illiterate. It's just... it's there for comedic effect and still works. It's kind of inspirational, but not in an educational way here.
Mm-hmm. And I love, so Marvin just yells, "For the Gipper!"
Who's the Gipper?
That's so lovely, Joel Askew delivered. I'm like,
who's the Gipper?
So good.
So great. So Dodgers and Cadet eventually have a battle with Mother Fudd, to which Dodger says to Cadet, "Okay, Gabula on your feet. Go handle him. I'll go do the instructions." So also, while they're running away from Mother Fudd, Mother Fudd's blasting them with lasers. And I just love Dodger's line of, "Watching Moyle, that was a near priss."
Only at 7 o'clock.
For the kids. So Cadet's plan is he's going to be on top of Mother Fudd and just start tap dancing.
Yeah, I love that.
And what I love is, first
dancing
of all,
on his head.
Dance on his head, it's classic cartoon dancing. Just Porky doesn't like break dance on his head, though that could actually be kind of funny. But, it's like nice cartoon dancing. Mother Fudd is so annoyed at it. And Dodger just goes up to the power station because has to raise the power to get it all over through Earth and Mars. And just love, oh no, words.
That's great. I love that.
So as Mother Fudd is trying to, be evil towards a cadet, my friend says, "Okay, well, he can't reach him because his arms are too short," which he says, "Oh, curse these tiny arms." So Fudd's plan is to ram him against the side of the ship.
I love the little slapstick of this where Porky jumps off and he just slams his head in.
Oh, but it's what he says that really sells it. It's so Porky says, "What would Gene Kelly do in a pinch like this?" And then
I love that.
Fudd slams his head to the wall. To which Porky says, "I gotta dance!" Which is so stupid, I can't help but love it. It's so... Oh my god. So meanwhile, what's going on? Marvin attaches the immunity jar. As, Porky kind of talks to Dodgers about how to read. Dodgers uses a song he learned on the tapes and returned for a cheese grater to read the instructions, leading him to read. And, like, it's actually a big moment for him. It's like, I can read! And Cadet is just crying, so happy that Dodgers can read. So Dodgers pulls the lever in the on position, which leads to the immunity jar to take a hold over everyone on Earth and Mars. Mother Fudd eventually gets Cadets, and he says, "Now listen, you wascally warthog," or whatever. I'm like, oh, that just doesn't have the same ring as Wabbit. It just doesn't.
It doesn't.
So the immunity goes over everyone on Earth and Mars. The farmers are back to normal. Also, I believe one of the farmers is voiced by Rob Paulsen, if I'm not mistaken.
I think so, yeah.
And it's just like, hey, I think we just got taken over by some weird alien life form. To which one of the farmer goes, it could have been gas. Which, yeah. And it hits this anti-Fudd thing. It hits everyone, including Mother Fudd.
As I love this
turns
reveal.
Out, this is so great. As it turns out, Mother Fudd was literally Elmer Fudd. I love everyone else is playing a role in this. Nobody else is themselves in this show. They're playing a role.
Yeah.
But Elmer Fudd is just Elmer Fudd.
And he just goes, "Shouldn't I be out hunting rabbits?"
Great line.
Almost curiously.
And then we get to this, award ceremony, hey, we're saving the world, thank you. And then we get this, gag about how, like, the Dodgers, like, teach, like, hey, listen, kids, if you color down the lines and do all this stuff, you can end up just like me.
Yeah.
Could have ended on a stronger gag there, but
yeah, it was fine.
It was fine. So, this is the Duck Dodgers cartoon I remember. It's like the action and the comedy, like it really is dialed greatly in this episode. I love the Duck Dodgers in the 24th half century-esque moments between Daffy and Marvin in the beginning.
Yeah.
The incredibly over-the-top nature of this episode. I will say, I did forget about how many pop culture references were in this.
Well, not all of them are a problem.
Nah, but a bit over the top. But the humor, what I like about this is, first of all, it definitely does have some more Looney Tunes-esque humor in this, which is nice. But it does good enough on its own merits. Like, it does its own comedic spin on the characters while still being faithful to the characters.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just had a great time watching this episode. And so much fun.
Yeah, so did I. Some really great creative ideas here. I love the team-up arc, as well as the action stuff heading towards the climax. And also, just, it's a great execution of a great concept. Even, again, still lacking in some humor. Still very much focused on action and about sci-fi elements, but it was a lot of fun, and I like how they sort of went there with the Elmer-ness of it all. Yeah, another really good one.
I'm giving this a 4.5 out of 5 Elmers.
Yeah, that's what I'm giving it to.
Yeah. So, like the Pig in the Rain episode, I'd be down watching more Duck Dodgers in my free time.
Oh, me too. I mean, look, on one hand, we did pick two of the best episodes of the series. On the other hand...
True.
If this sort of mostly seriously respectfully handled as well as occasionally goof oriented sort of way is how the rest of them are, then I'm down. It feels like fun, and it's still kind of seriously handled enough that you can still get some good, like, enjoyable action thrills out of it.
Yes. There's also that other classic episode where Duck Dodgers embodies Tom Jones. In like a Martian Callan show or something, and he's singing It's Not Unusual.
Because Mel Torme was busy.
Yeah. I will say, one last thing. This has no connection with anything, so I'm going to put it here. Duck Dodgers is kind of responsible for introducing me to Weird Al Yankovic.
Yeah.
Because what happened was about like, 13 years ago or something. When I was about like 12 or 13, I was on a public library, and I'm thinking, I'm in a nostalgic mood. I think I'll watch some Duck Dodgers clips because, it's been a minute. It was like 5 years since the show's off the air or something. So I'm still in the Duck Dodgers clips, watching them, whatever. And I see a video titled eBay Duck Dodgers. I'm like, they do like a parody of eBay on Duck Dodgers, and I click on it, and it's an AMV, which is an animated music video of someone did of Duck Dodger clips, moments where Duck Dodgers is like surrounded by garbage or what have you, and underneath it was the Weird Al Yankovic song eBay, which was a parody of I Want It That Way by Backstreet Boys.
What I bought on eBay, tell me why I need another pet rock. Tell me why I got that alpha alarm clock. Tell me why I bid on Shatner's old toupee that had it on eBay.
And this blew my mind at the time. I'm like, oh my god, what is this? This is the most funniest thing ever. Like, oh my god, you got me more of this. And I'm like, well, who's this Weird Al Yankovic guy? And I just went down a Weird Al Yankovic rabbit hole. So, that video is unfortunately no longer on YouTube because you can't have that up on YouTube. No. But, yeah, I kind of have Duck Dodgers to thank for getting me into the fantastic talents of Weird Al Yankovic. So, thanks.
I mean, I was into him before this. I had cousins who were into I think like Al Palooza album like the one in 1999 with The Saga Continues.
Oh, that's Running with Scissors.
Oh, Running with Scissors. Okay.
All right.
So, next week, is one I haven't especially been looking forward to going back to.
Yes, Steve. Which, okay. If you had to put it, which we looked at the schedule, Jordan, of this little block we're doing. Which one frightened you more? Last week's with Baby Looney Tunes or the one coming up next week? Like, which one was like, oh God, not this?
Well, Baby Looney Tunes is harmless. Like, it's not trying to, you know, do anything too edgy or too risky as if to warrant some sort of other reaction. Baby Looney Tunes is doing its thing. It's very kind, very respectful, a bit too wholesome sometimes. It's not going to, like, piss you off by being too much. Lunatics Unleashed.
Oh, boy.
I don't think it's going to be wholesome. I think it's going to be horrifying.
Do you think it'll piss us off as much as it did back then?
I don't think so, but I think we're still going to have a hard time with this episode.
Yep, so that's what we're doing. We're doing Lunatics Unleashed next week. The episodes we are doing are Lunatics Are Nice, which was the first episode of the series, at least in broadcast order. I'm not what your production was. And The Music Villain.
Yeah.
Unlike this week's episode, we didn't watch this show that much, kind of out of anger, but we'll get into that when we do, because, yeah.
Not good.
Boy howdy, were we pissed off 9-year-olds. or however we were. Oh, God. All right, so that's going to be next week's show. So until then, that's the end of this week's show. If you'd like to keep up with us on Twitter, you can follow me at MarkHallam1995.
And you can follow me at TallGuySchmidt.
If you'd like to keep up with the podcast or give your thoughts for next week's episode, you can follow at @that_loony or type in the podcast title. We are the first result.
You can also find this podcast wherever podcasts are readily available. That includes your Apple Podcast, your Google Podcast, your Spotify Podcast, Player FM, Anchor. We're on Amazon Music as well. Wherever you want to find us, we're going to be there.
All right. So until next week, have we? I'm Mark.
And I'm Jordan. And now the judges scores. Carrie Annie now. 8. Ba-doom. Len Goodman. 8. Ba-doom. Bruno Antonio, 7!
Hands up.